This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. All that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Don't mind us, we're playing through. Here's Froggy and Wacker.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are. A podcast that I'm not sure we thought we would ever do, but one I'm extremely excited to do. It's Froggy from the Elvis Duran Morning Show, at Froggy Radio on Twitter and Instagram, at Playing Through Podcast on Instagram, at Playthrough Golf on Twitter. You can hear my voice still is not recovered from Sunday afternoon. Joined by Brian Wacker, who I'm starting to get slightly jealous of because now he has attended both victories on the comeback trail, at Brian Wacker 1 on Instagram and Twitter. Brian, you were there at Augusta National Golf Club Sunday afternoon and watched what arguably is one of the greatest comebacks in sports history. Tell us what it was like.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further and say it is the greatest comeback in sports history, but we'll get into that later on. Yeah, the atmosphere was incredible. One of the coolest things to me was, as I was roaming around the 18th green and into the clubhouse as Tiger was finishing up, seeing all of their past champions, all of the green jackets, a number of them, six, seven, eight of them, had gathered in the champions' locker room, said, hey, let's put on our green jackets, have a drink, sort of come down to congratulate Tiger. There was Bernard Langer. There was Zach Johnson. Adam Scott was there. Bubba Watson was there. There were about a half a dozen, maybe eight guys, past winners. And I'd never seen that. I've covered now 11 Masters, and I've never seen that take place before, where you had all these past winners and then a bunch of tour players as well. Justin Thomas stuck around and came back out. Ricky Fowler was there. Of course, Justin and Ricky are guys that hang around with Tiger down in South Florida. They play a lot of home games with each other. So this was really cool from that standpoint to see not just the fan reaction. And I've got another story on that, by the way, that we can get into in a few minutes. But just to see all of the past winners and everybody gather around there, and it was really just chaos unfolding on the back lawn of Augusta National. It was really cool and just an awesome atmosphere, as you would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, let's get back. You know, I want to go back to, I remember we were doing the podcast, December of 2017, I believe it was. It was 2015 or 2017. I get my dates mixed up, but he did the press conference and said, you know, I've had a great career, I've had a great run, and I'll never, ever forget these words. Anything I do from here on out is just gravy. And that was when you said to me, we're done. Like, we've seen it. We've witnessed greatness. We've watched it. We've lucky that it's happened in our lifetime. But listen, man, his body is just broken down. He's not going to be able to do it again. And that wasn't something that we were just saying. That came out of his own mouth. We were done. And then we saw the simulator video where he showed us swinging the golf club, and then we saw he came back at the hero the first time, and the Tiger crazy maniacs like me got excited and thought, well, here we go. And you were very honest and said, listen, it's a golf course that's very wide. It plays in his strengths. You know, he still drove it all over the place, and it's not the same. And you know, I always wanted to make more out of it than it was, and I was always guilty of making every little morsel a meal because I wanted it to. I wanted him to come back so badly, and not that you didn't, being a golf fan. I know that you also wanted Tiger Woods to come back, Brian. But
I thought he was done. Look, I'll admit it. I was way wrong. And you know, I mean, it's easy now to look at. I mean, certainly you look at when the comeback started. You say, okay, well, look, clearly it's not. He's not done. He's going to play some golf, and we'll see what happens. But look, I wrote a story a couple of years ago when he missed the Masters, reporting that he was going to be able, or he wasn't going to be able to play the Masters, according to several sources. And one of those sources was actually in Tiger's presence at an event or at an occurrence 5 days before I'd written the story. And this source had said, look, Tiger really was in bad shape. Could barely walk. You know, all he could do at the time was putt, and he really thought he was finished. This particular person thought, man, I don't know if he's going to play golf again. Because it didn't look like, I mean, at least given the present state, like this was not a guy who could play golf. So,
right.
Of course, and then he has spinal fusion surgery, which really was like the last, that was a number of weeks later. He has spinal fusion surgery in the spring of 2017. And that was the last step. If that didn't sort of work and he wasn't able to heal the way he did, that was it. That was the Hail Mary.
Yeah. And I don't think the spinal fusion surgery was done with the thought of playing golf. I think the spinal fusion surgery, was done to hope to have his life back, to be able to be a parent, to be able to spend time with his kids. I think he had put in playing golf out of his mind. He just wanted to be able to be a human being and enjoy his life and get around. Golf was second. It was a distant thought.
Even after he comes back, he has the made for tabloid arrest on the suspicion of DUI. Of course, charges were later reduced where he's found passed out behind the wheel of his car. On the side of the road at 2 o'clock in the morning in Jupiter.
Right.
Then he goes to rehab. Then there's some other thing. I mean, this guy, you know, has undergone, you know, take the physical stuff. And this goes back to my point of greatest comeback because, look, Hogan was nearly killed in a head-on car accident and came back and won a lot, but a head-on collision with a bus. But look, that was an incredible, incredible comeback. And I'm not even sure, like, you want to compare one against the other. Both are incredible, obviously.
Right.
But the fact is, you look at the world that Tiger exists in, the fishbowl that he exists in now, that only makes things that much more difficult.
Right.
From an emotional standpoint, a mental standpoint, and he overcomes all of that shit to come back and to be at this point where we are now, from go back 2 years from today, I mean, it's remarkable.
And when you really think about it, if you want to put it all in perspective, since he's come back, he's played in 5 majors. Last year at Augusta National, there was a lot of pressure we all thought coming out of the second place finish in Tampa, and he had contended at Bay Hill. We really thought last year's Masters was going to that was going to be it, and it was too soon. Then he gets to the U.S. Open and he misses the cut. And so, the expectations are slightly tempered. But you take the last 2 majors of last season. He was there on Sunday afternoon, holding the lead in one of them and contending at the other. And then he shows up at Augusta National and he wins. You're talking, the guy's played 5 major tournaments and he's contended or held the lead or won in 3 of them in the last 3. It really is remarkable how far we've come in 2 years, that we went from a guy was never going to play the game again to now the last 3 majors in a row, he's either held the lead, contended, or won. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and now, and I wrote this Sunday night for GolfDigest.com. You can read the story. You know, 18 is still in play now. Now 18, the conversation can be had again. The record, Jack Nicklaus' record of 18 major championships, you know, that people were like, look, let's just enjoy that he's able to play golf again, right?
Right.
And then it's, okay, he's able to win again. And it's like, well, okay, maybe he can win a 15th major, and that would be remarkable. Well, now he's done that. And so now he's only three back of Jack, tying his record. And you look at the venues coming up.
Right.
Bethpage for the PGA Championship, where he's won before. Yep, and Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open, where he's won. And look, Royal Portrush for the Open Championship, he's never played. It's a Lynx golf course. He's won three British Opens or three Open Championships. It's certainly not out of the realm of possibility to think, under the right circumstances and conditions and his game being in form, that he could win there. So, you know, certainly it would be a lot to ask to say, oh, you know, he's going to win two more majors this year, but he could certainly win another, and I don't think any of us would be stunned. I mean, it would just add to the comeback, into the legend, into the story. But and then you know, obviously goes back to Augusta National every year. Remember, Jack won there at 46 in 1986 for his last major. So Tiger, while the fascinating thing to me about this victory was that, the last time he had won at Augusta was 2005. And there's been a lot of changes to the golf course since then. It'd been lengthened, and some of the, he was no longer a guy who could sort of dominate with his length there. And it was quote unquote Tiger proof. Now, he certainly had success playing well there since 2005, but never really had a chance late to win on Sunday until this year. And the fact that he was able to win this year proves he can win on this newly lengthened Augusta National. Look at the fifth hole.
Yeah, I don't think he's a fan of the fifth hole. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's not a fan of the fifth hole.
Right. Bogeys it every day, but still manages to win the golf tournament.
So
there's a hole that was lengthened 50 yards, right? And he still manages to somehow, he made bogey there every day, but he still figured out other places where he could make birdies and do what he needed to do.
Right. And that's the thing is, I know everybody misses putts. I know what happens. But do you know that he led the field in missed putts inside 5 feet? He led the field. So if he makes half of those, the guy runs away with the golf tournament. He runs away with it. It's not even a one-shot lead. He runs away.
Well,
this could have been so much more.
Right. And that's the difference now. Like, that's the difference with Tiger at 43 versus Tiger at 25 or even 30, to me, is that, putting is one of the real arts of the game. And the touch and feel that goes into it, that tends to sort of erode as guys get older. We don't see guys typically get better at putting as they get older. It just doesn't happen. It's just not the way the game is. So to your point, like, I'm not surprised that he missed a bunch of short putts, because that's what we've seen this year. But he figured out other ways, other things to do. And look, let's be honest. He got plenty of help. Four guys in the last two groups of six, or threesomes, you know. So four of the last six guys to tee off, hit it in the water on 12.
Right.
Molinari hitting it in the water inexplicably on 15. He had some help, so things went his way from that standpoint. Now, was Molinari feeling the pressure of Tiger breathing down his neck? You know, I mean, this is a guy who made a bunch of putts throughout the course of that round, a bunch of 6, 7, 8, 10-foot par putts that were clutch. But did he eventually crack under that pressure? I don't know. It's easy to sit here and say sure, but it's hard. These guys are trying to win a major championship, and Tiger, with that experience at Augusta, and really looking calm and comfortable. And, you know, like, I asked him in his press conference afterward if there was a moment either when he got in there earlier in the week or even during the tournament early on, where he felt like, you know, this really could be my week. And his response is interesting in that he said he'd been two things. One, he'd been preparing for this week for 6 months. He'd been putting his focus for the last 6 months on this golf tournament with the types of shots he needed to hit. And one of those shots was hitting a draw. Augusta's a place you have to be able to hit the ball right to left on occasion. You don't see a lot of faders often win there. So he finally felt comfortable with the driver hitting right to left shots where he could just kind of let it go. And the same thing with some of his other irons and plays like that. So to me, there were shots throughout the course of the week that he really just finally felt comfortable with that he'd been working on, and he was able to execute those.
Right.
So that's a golf course now clearly he can win on again.
Right. You got to think, I mean, for 6 months.
He just did it.
He basically for 6 months. Yeah. The other tournaments he's been playing this year, where we have talked about, he's had some struggles. He really wasn't. And it's not that he didn't want to win. Of course he teed it up. He wanted to win, but he has had, much like he used to do earlier in his career, he wants to peak for the majors. So he spent 6 months getting ready for this golf tournament, and he won it. You have to think that moving forward, as we're going to get into the PGA Championship, which has been moved, and that's now the next major, as we get into the PGA Championship, that he is going to be trying to hit shots and mimic shots that he will need to hit on that golf course in order to be comfortable, and that's where his focus will now turn to. Do you agree?
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about that is Augusta is a place where you can, you know, you can hit it a little bit crooked off the tee, and it's not going to kill you. I've thought about this. Like, if you look at the Tour Championship in Eastlake where he won, that was a golf course where once he played well enough those first couple of days to put himself in position, he could play, he could continue to play well. And it was also a place where he wasn't really going to get himself in a lot of trouble. There weren't holes. Like, you can go back earlier last year, the Honda Classic, where he had played well. But there were holes coming down the stretch there, 15, 16, 17, with a lot of water and difficult holes in places where you could make a big number.
Right.
East Lake is the opposite of that. There's really no water in play there for the most part. So there's really nowhere for him to make a big number. So once he got into position and he's playing against a small field and half the field's already out of it by the weekend anyway, essentially, and just there to collect, you know, a paycheck and maybe work on the game, the field really narrows and the competition sort of slides away. And then Tiger really only has to beat a handful of guys. And was so everything really was like stars aligning. And the same thing with Augusta National. When you got to Sunday, there's places where you can make big numbers. We saw that on 12. We've seen it on 15, 13, et cetera. We've seen guys do that in the past. But given his experience and his comfort level and having won again already, so there he wasn't going to put himself in trouble. He knows where to miss, as he said on Sunday afterward. He knows not to go out the flag on 12, and seeing everything unfolding around him, yeah, I'm just going to play it safe. That's the play. Hit it on the green, take your two putt, and get out of here. You know, he's actually putting okay,
yeah,
especially on longer putts. So, you know, the strategy and the experience around that place really makes a difference. And given his knowledge and his golf IQ, he wasn't going to make a big number coming in.
But I wonder if his strategy on 12, real quick, I wonder if his strategy changed because Molinari did tee off first and he dunks it in the water. And I know Finau went third and his rolled back down the hill into the water too on 12, and Tiger's the only one that hit it in the middle of the green. But I wonder if that strategy changes if, let's say, Francesco knocks one in there 10 feet. Does Tiger still aim middle of the green just over the bunker and play for three?
Yeah, I think Tiger still plays conservatively because he knows the risk just isn't worth it because The point is he knows where to miss. Okay, so if he misses a little left, he's okay. If you go at the flag and you miss anything to the right or short, you're making a big number. You're really taking yourself out of the golf tournament. So from that perspective, yeah, play it a little, you know, maybe he would have gotten slightly more aggressive, but he still would have given himself probably no closer than a 20-footer, 25-footer for a putt, and then take your shots because he knows he can take his shot on 13. He knows he can take his shot on 15, which he did on both of those holes. And by the way, again, you hit it offline at Bethpage for the PGA, you could end up in some trouble. You hit it offline at Pebble Beach, the U.S. Open, where you don't need a lot of drivers there, but that's a little bit dependent upon how the course is playing, too. If it for whatever reason, plays a little softer that time of year than it normally would, then, yeah, you might take a little more driver, and that's going to bring some other guys into the fold. But you can't really hit it offline in some of these other events off the tee, whereas Augusta, you can kind of get away. And look, he was very fortunate on 11, and I realize we're nitpicking here. He was very fortunate on 11 on Saturday and Sunday. He blew it right both times. I was actually down there when he hit it there on Saturday and got a terrific break because it was a wide-open shoot to the green. If he's 5 or 10 feet farther to the right, he's blocked out.
And even on number two Sunday, on number two, you said there's a hazard just to the left of where he pulled it left, and the ball just came straight down. He was able to chop it out and get out of there with a par.
Exactly. So, I mean, you can't hit the, you know, and we thought, oh boy, here we go. He, you know, Molinari makes that huge putt on one to save par. And then Tiger, sure enough, snap, you know, gets the old snap going on two. And luckily the ball gets knocked out, to your point, because there's a creek down there and it all runs down toward that creek. I've seen Rory McIlroy and plenty of other guys hit it into the hazard there. You know, we saw Brooks Koepka on Saturday, I think it was, hit it down, you know, into that area and then struggle to get out and make double bogey. That, you know, very fortunate in that regard. So, again, it goes back to the original point. Like, the conversation now is how many more majors can he win? Because it's clear he can win. He's already won a major.
Right.
There's no reason to think he can't win another one or maybe even three more.
But we have said this, you know, we've had this conversation, and it's something you kind of brushed over. And I do want to believe that in some way, shape, or form, that little bit of intimidation factor that he had that was so big back during what I'll call Tiger 1.0 or whatever you want to call it. I think there was a little bit of that intimidation factor that is going to creep back in. I do, you know, listen. Francesco stared him down and beat him at the British Open. And Tiger had a share of the lead. He went and took a share of the lead, hit that amazing shot out of the bunker over the berm. Yeah, he did not make the birdie putt, but he made par there. But then he gets to the next hole, hits it in the fescue, then hits a shank hosel rocket out of there, makes double on the next hole, was never the same. And yes, I do understand that playing – the Open Championship, there was probably a greater amount of people for Francesco in the crowd than there was at Augusta National. That was a Tiger crowd on Sunday at Augusta National, understandably. But I do think the intimidation factor that Tiger Woods has, you know, all these people have said, oh, no, we want him to come back. We want to play against him. We want to beat him. We want to this. I'm not so sure they understand what it's like. When he gets going, to see what he did, like I just said, when he had the lead at the British Open, he faltered slightly. And it's happened a couple times when he's really had a chance. And you had brought this up a bunch of times, Wacker, that he had a chance on Sunday at Tampa, and he just didn't get it done. Yeah, Paul Casey had a great round with what, like 20-some putts, very low number, 20 putts, at Bay Hill last year. He gets on the 16th tee or 15th tee, whichever hole it was he was on. I think it was 16, and he pulls it left out of bounds. He had opportunities to close and did not get it done. On Sunday, the opportunity's there. Frankie hits it in the water, makes a big number on 12. Tiger gets the lead. He then pulls ahead. There's six guys tied for the lead, it's all right there for the taking. And in the past, we had seen him kind of back up in those moments. And here he goes. He birdies 15. He gets to 16 and almost jars it and makes another birdie, gets his two-shot lead, and then hits a monstrous drive, a blistered drive on 17. I just feel like we finally saw something that we've been waiting to see for a long time this past weekend. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. The part to me that's interesting, again, is now what? Like, where does this lead to? Because so much went into, obviously, the Tour Championship in that win. So much went into this. But again, it doesn't seem inconceivable to think he could win a couple of more majors. I don't know if he'll get there.
All right, well, let's do the math real quick. How many more years do you think he plays? Like, can he play this year and then five more years? I understand we don't know. We've never seen anything like this with his back, so we don't know how long. But let's say the back stays healthy and we don't have any more knee. And there are no more health issues, and there's no more personal in any of that stuff. We're just talking healthy golf for the rest of this year and five more years. So you're talking 23 more opportunities to win a major. 23 opportunities. He has contended, held the lead, or won in the last three. Can he not win three more out of 23?
That's, it's like looking at just the math of it, it sounds like he should, right?
Because, right.
Well, there's 23 and there's three, but just think about it from the standpoint of how often guys have won majors in a span like that, and how often guys – then you look at guys who have won majors, post 43 years old. It's a short list. I realize Tiger
– but he's not everybody else. Guys.
Right, I get that. But the point is, it's still hard to win one – at this point, never mind three. So, I don't know. I think he could. I don't think any of us – I think it would be stunning from the standpoint of we never thought this would even be possible again.
Is this his greatest victory? Win number 81, major number 15. Is it his greatest victory?
A good friend of mine, Robert Lucetich, a former Fox Sports golf writer and an Australian and has been around a long time in the game. He ranked and he's covered all of Tiger's big moments and he sort of on Twitter the other day ranked Tiger's major victories. And when you take the big picture view of it, he put 97 at the Masters number one. And that speaks to the cultural importance, the transcendent nature of it, all of that. And I agree with him. That's me. Tops the list. Now, was it the most difficult? No. He won by a whole by a record margin. Was it the most significant? Yes. To me, that was the most significant. Then I would go to, I used to go to 2008 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, winning on a broken leg. But that was just physical pain that he had to overcome, and let's face it, the pain on that was really just after impact. I'm not diminishing it, but it was just one thing. It was a matter of just dealing with pain and pain, and that's obviously a hard thing to deal with and play golf at that level. But this, to me, is actually now the second greatest victory, and this is where Robert put it as well. Sort of this goes down as number two in all time for Tiger because of everything that he's been through that we just alluded to from the, you can go back to the scandal, the divorce, the tabloids, the releasing of the naked pictures, the DUI, I mean, all of it, the pain, the pills, all sorts of stuff. Look, when I wrote some stories on Tiger a few years ago, one of them was sort of figuring out how he was spending his time while he was injured and not playing. And this is back in 2016. And really, he was a ghost. And we saw all of this stuff come to fruition sort of little by little in the years that followed that, yeah, he had some issues with pain and sleep medication. He had major health issues where he couldn't get out of bed. He had become this sort of reclusive, figure. And he was like Bruce, he was like Bruce Wayne, where you just never saw the guy.
Right.
And he just disappeared almost. Like, I was walking through the airport in Atlanta yesterday. This is great, right? People were talking about Tiger Woods. I heard these two sort of teenage, maybe early 20-something girls talking about Tiger. Oh, Tiger won yesterday.
That's so awesome.
And one of them said, yeah, didn't he like retire for a little while? Like, they had no idea. Like, this guy, so that's how much he vanished. Like, people thought he just retired, basically. And he just, and he might as well have, because he was completely gone. But to me, all he'd overcome physically, mentally, all of the scandal, all of the tabloid stuff, the TMZ nature things, all of that to get to this point, that to me makes this probably his second greatest or most significant victory of his career, only because that 97 Masters is what started it all. And that was so culturally significant and just so transcendent that this one, from a comeback standpoint, is by far, like I said, this to me is the greatest comeback of all time. You know, if you're going to rank those things, I mean, certainly Hogan and other comebacks have been unbelievable, but this is at least on the same line, if not higher.
Right. And real quick, I'm not even sure if you know, what's with the gum? Like, I noticed the gum chewing was really prevalent. I know some other guys, Phil has said that it has to do with some frontal cortex. I don't think the Tiger said it's just,
he says it prevents him from eating during rounds.
Right.
Like,
that's it.
Like what? Really?
Do we know what brand of gum he's chewing? Does he have a gum endorsement?
I'm sure there is one. I'm sure Mark Steinberg's phone has been ringing off the hook with offers from Orbit or Trident or Bubblicious or I'm sure there's all sorts of gum offers coming Tiger's way, but preventing from eating, like, why can't that work for the rest of us?
Right, I know, right? So I need spinal fusion and a pack of gum, and I'm going to be able to win the Masters. I mean, that's it. That's all it takes now.
Yeah, to actually play better golf, and that's all you need. And to maybe, if people who want to go on a diet, just go chew gum. That'll prevent you from eating, right?
That's it. So we move on this week to the RBC Heritage Open, a pretty good field. I know Dustin Johnson's playing. Quite a few guys that we saw at Augusta National will be there next week. The Zurich.
Jordan Spieth, your favorite player.
Spieth. Yeah, how'd that Masters turn out? Well, that's right.
Jordan clearly is still not, he didn't play horribly there. But the guy I really want to talk about, was Rory McIlroy even in the tournament? I mean, I saw him earlier in the week, but
it was funny. Rory would make some runs and then he would kind of cool off and make a couple bogeys and he'd make some runs. And then he worked his way into the top five a couple times. I tell you what's shocking.
He did play his best golf on Sunday when he was nowhere near contention.
Right.
But honestly, look, and Rory's terrific. And I do think at some point he probably will win a green jacket because there's so much talent there. Look, I used to think Phil Mickelson was maybe going to go his entire career without winning a green jacket. And we saw how that turned out. He's won three of them. So, but Rory, there are guys, you look at the history of that tournament, who people would have pegged for sure for a green jacket. Greg Norman, a terrific driver of the golf ball, much the way Rory is. Davis Love. There are Ernie Els, another fantastic player, a great iron player. These are guys who many people before me in this business thought absolutely would win a green jacket, and they never did. And I'm starting to wonder, listening to Rory early in the week, talking about, if he never wins there, it won't define him. It might define him to people from a golf standpoint, but it won't define him from a life standpoint. And I get it. Like he's not all golf all the time, but clearly this has to be in his head at this point, because I'm starting to wonder if 2011 really was the one opportunity, like Dan Marino with the Super Bowl, right? You're a South Florida guy. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah. We thought he'd be back there every year.
Here in the league, he thought he'd be, and it never even got there.
No.
Never even got there.
No.
Again. So, like, does Rory never win a green jacket?
I tell you, another shocking performance was Justin Rose. He's really, I know he came out of the gate decent, but he struggled since changing equipment. Not sure that the move to Hamna was the best move for Justin Rose.
He's won some tournaments and things. You know, I was less concerned about Justin Rose, if you will, but you're right. It was a surprise. I think it was very surprising. The two big surprises to me to not play well there early in the week. Well, really three surprises were Justin Rose, just because he's had such a good track record there. And Paul Casey, this guy who won this year again in Tampa. Yeah. And this guy has been playing well and has played well at Augusta. He loves the golf course. I actually saw him on Tuesday night. Travelers Championship puts on an annual dinner every year, and they invite some members of the media, and it's a wonderful, wonderful event. It's Augusta. That's the other thing about the Masters. It is by far and away golf's biggest social event of the year. There's all sorts of business being conducted, meetings, events, parties. All sorts of things. The golf is almost secondary. Like that's how much of an event it is become. And Paul talked about just how much he really loves Augusta National, and just, you know, it suits his eye really well. It suits his game. He felt very good going in there. And then goes out and shoots 81 in the first round.
Oh yeah, he had a terrible week.
81. That was brutal.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Justin Rose, but to me, Rory was never a factor, and that was just stunning to me. That he was never a factor in this golf tournament, which is mind-boggling. And I'm starting to wonder how much it's in his head, and how much every year passes that he doesn't win there just only adds to that scar tissue. I mean, what's your take on Rory, and do you think he ever wins there?
You know, I did think this was going to be his year. He had played well coming in. He had that great – he played well at the match play until he – played Tiger. I think he had, two or three bogeys through his first three rounds. You know, I don't know. You wonder how much scar tissue is there from that one year, the year where he shot 40.
Yeah,
I mean, you wonder how much is there. And then how much is just pressure? You just want to get it done. It's like, you know, Tiger said earlier in the week, I don't need to win, but I want to. And I think maybe Rory's still feeling like he needs to win. And maybe that's where, until you can convince yourself that you don't need it, you just want it. And when you want it, there's a little less pressure.
Early in the week, but see, early in the week, he talks about sort of not needing to win there.
It's easy to say that. It's easy to say that.
It's like, is he psyching himself out, trying to, you know, feel like a reverse psychology of like, well, if I don't win there, it's no big deal. Well, hang on a second. Like, I don't know. Maybe you should feel like, I don't know. He knows, certainly knows better what works for him. But,
right.
But it does beg the question of like, and I wrote a piece early in the week last week about Rory's sort of evolution of both how he's played the golf course, his feelings about it, his emotions, all of this, how it's sort of evolved and changed and developed. And it's fascinating to see because, to your point, 2011, I mean, he had that. It was right there for his taking. He had a four-shot lead going in the last day and just collapsed.
Yeah.
And shot 80. And then you take that up to last year when he has – he goes into the last round trailing by a couple of shots.
Missed that little eagle putt.
A three-foot eagle putt on the second hole, and it doesn't even touch the hole. And he talked about it. He said he went to the third tee feeling like he was pressing. He needed to press at that point because, he just missed an opportunity and it was deflating. And he felt like he needed to press. And then, of course, we see what happened. It didn't work out. So, look, I do think his skill set is such that he would win there one day. But now I don't know. Is it mentally, is it just too much? Or, you know, maybe really the best opportunity would be if he comes from four or five back on the final day and throws up a number and it ends up being good enough, or, you know, sort of stumbles into it a little bit the way a Sergio Garcia did. You know, not taking anything away from Sergio's victory, but, you know, Justin Rose missed a couple of key shots there down the stretch, missed a putt that would have ultimately won the tournament in regulation for him on the 18th hole. So you won, and Sergio took advantage of those opportunities. You know, you wonder if that's what it'll be for Rory, if that's what it'll take, or if he'll just be an Ernie Els or a Davis Love or a guy who, you know, a Greg Norman, a tremendous driver. I see a lot of parallels with Rory and Grant and Greg, because those are two guys who are terrific drivers of the golf ball off the tee. But then once you get up toward, you know, as you get closer to the hole with those little pitches and nuances and things, that's where Rory tends to struggle. And, you know, as good as he has played this year, and look, maybe we're just putting too much into this. Maybe, you know, look, it's just one year, it's just one Masters, but I don't know. It's fascinating to me to watch and see how this plays out, because I do think he'll win there, but, you know, boy, it's, you wonder how much it's going to be in his head, and if it only continues to build.
Right, and every year makes it a little bit worse.
Right.
You know, too, something we didn't bring up is that for the very first time, it's hard to believe it's never happened before, but in 14 majors, Tiger had never come from behind. He had always either held a share of the lead or was the outright leader going into the final round. This is the first time he's ever been behind and come back to win. That's another thing that he's kind of another notch. People had said, well, if he's not winning, he doesn't come from behind. Like, he really kind of went out and kind of showed that he's capable of doing it however it needs to get done. Tiger got it done. And so it was good to see it done again. I know people are wondering, when will we see Tiger again? And looking at the schedule, he's not in this week's RBC Heritage. Then next week is a team event, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. That's a team event defended by a good friend of the podcast, Billy Horschel and Scott Piercy. The week after that, May 2nd through the 5th, a tournament he normally plays, the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow in Charlotte. I think we'll see Tiger there. Then the Byron Nelson in Texas. I don't think we'll see Tiger there. And then the week after that is the PGA Championship. We know he likes to take a week off. So I think we see Tiger May 2nd, a week off, and then he will go at Bethpage Black at the PGA Championship for major number 16.
Yeah, that would seem to be the likely schedule for him. He did talk about playing less this year, but I can't imagine going into the next major that he won't want to play a competitive round between now and then. And Wells Fargo would seem like the natural fit at Quail Hollow, you know, a place that suits him well and, you know, makes sense for a lot of reasons. He's tight with Johnny Harris, who runs things down there. So that would seem like the logical next Tiger sighting. And then, of course, Bethpage Black for the PGA, which would be fascinating to see because, you know, Long Island in the spring can be an interesting, interesting place.
But he'll have the fans on his side, and so will Phil as well.
Look, he's already the favorite. He's already the favorite for that tournament. He's already the favorite for Pebble Beach and the U.S. Open in June. Probably will be end up being the favorite at Royal Portrush for the Open Championship in July. So he's pretty much going to be the favorite now for every golf tournament he enters.
Right. You know, guys that are much smarter than you and me, Johnny Miller once said, and I'll never forget he said this, he believed 15 would be the hardest one to win after everything he had gone through. And he believed after winning 15, it would blow the lid off and that he would then be able to win more and more again. Because, like, somebody asked him in the press conference, you were there, they said, what does this prove? He said, it proves one thing, I can win majors again. And now in his mind, he knows he's capable of winning.
Absolutely. And Ricky Fowler, I talked to him after the round on Sunday, and he said the same thing. He said 15 felt like that was going to be the most difficult one. And once he got to that, you know, now that brings 18 into the equation again, because Tiger, you know, at this level of golf, he's still got 3, 4, 5 years left to try to chase down more majors. And certainly some of those venues are going to suit him. And, you know, now the chase is back on. And look, even if he never gets there, it just getting to this point is incredible. Like, this is something, again, that we never thought would happen. And even Tiger, I'm sure at some point, never thought this would happen. But now it just opens up the possibilities, and it's fun to see again, because it's something we never thought we'd get to see again.
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time you opened up and saw the front page of all the major newspapers yesterday?
New York Times, A1, above the fold.
New York Times.
That tells you Tiger's significance, yeah.
USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Post, The Daily News, every single one of them, Tiger with his hands in the air as a victor. When's the last time golf dominated the front of every newspaper? It was great. As I'm sitting there watching the tournament, watching it, every single push notification on my phone from all these major news sources, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, AP, all these pushes coming out. USA Today, Tiger Woods is the champion once again. I was at a music festival, Tortuga Music Festival, on Sunday afternoon in Fort Lauderdale Beach. They stopped the festival down to announce Tiger Woods had won the 2019 Masters. That's how much Tiger means to not just golf, but to the sports world, is that he transcends golf. If anybody else had won that golf tournament, it's not on the front page of every newspaper. Because it's Tiger Woods, it makes it more newsworthy.
No, and they're not stopping the Tortuga Music Festival down in Fort Lauderdale for that. What was the reaction, by the way, when they did that?
The crowd went nuts. It was great. I mean, granted, I was one of them, but, man, the crowd went crazy. And my wife even said, and my wife is not a massive golf fanatic. She's had to endure Tiger loving for many years and have it shoved down her throat. But she looked at me and said, wow, he really is bigger than golf. I said, he is. He transcends the sport. He makes the sport mainstream, and that's what's fabulous about Tiger Woods. And that's why when we do this podcast, well, we rarely do one that I don't talk about him or mention him in some way, shape, or form, because he is the needle. He moves it more than anybody else. And so to be on the forefront again is good for our sport. It's good for him. And it's exciting moving forward. Golf is in a really, really good place right now.
When on Monday morning, driving around Augusta, I was trying to find some of those newspapers you mentioned. You couldn't find them. And I mean, they were scarce. People were snatching those things up to get a piece of history. And I asked you about the reaction at Tortuga because I'm curious. I'm actually doing a story that people can read about on golfdigest.com coming up here after this. We're gathering people's reactions, where they were, what they were doing, what their reaction was, all of that to see. Because this almost reminded me a bit of when 2016, Froggy, you know this, I'm a big Chicago Cubs fan.
Yep.
And when they won the World Series, the reactions around the country and around the world and stuff, it was just off the charts. Now, this is not that dissimilar. I mean, people, this is, again, something people never thought they'd see. For some people, they'd never seen this period because it's been that long since Tiger had won a major. So they heard about it. As even Tiger said, he was a YouTube golfer to his kids.
Right.
They never experienced it. Their memories of him in golf were pain, were him suffering.
The embrace with his children at the same spot he hugged his father in 1997 brought tears to every single person. If you're a parent and that didn't bring tears to your eyes, you're not human. I mean, just to see a guy who stood there and his father instilled all he did in him and helped Tiger be the golfer that he was and the man that he was, and you could see the emotion in his face in 97 after his dad had triple bypass heart surgery and a heart attack. And like Tiger said, probably shouldn't have even been there. To see the emotion in Tiger's face and how happy he was to hug his father. And then that many years later, talking 22 years later, to walk off the green and there's Charlie and Samantha and his girlfriend, and to see them and his mother standing there and him hug those children the way he did, it completely humanizes him and shows that he feels emotion just like the rest of us, and the things that mean the most to him are the same things that mean the most to us.
Yeah, and it was a wild scene, man. It really was. Just to see, it was chaotic. It's the most chaotic I've ever seen at Augusta. I'm sure it's been more chaotic there in the past, but as far as me, you know, I wasn't there in '97 when he won. I wasn't there when Jack in '86 and some of these other sort of historic moments there, but it was chaotic. I mean, the grill room was packed. You know, everyone was watching. People were sticking around. It was quite a scene. I mean, just the fact that you had all these green jacket, you know, you had the former champions putting on their green jackets just to pay homage to Tiger and to stick around. You know, guys, when they finish a golf tournament, man, this isn't like team sports. They're out. You know, you finished 43rd. You basically like pack up your stuff, maybe right. Grab a bite to eat, and you're out. You might not even grab a bite to eat. You might even go straight to the airport. Depends. So these guys, some of these guys stuck around. They wanted to see it. They wanted to be a part of it and soak it all in. And it was cool to see. It really was.
Well, before we go, we have a TaylorMade season opener.
Cool. This is a great little prize here we're going to give away.
Masters Edition bag. The same bag you saw Rory carrying, the same bag you saw Dustin Johnson, Jon Rahm, many of the TaylorMade guys. Tiger does have his own bag deal separate of TaylorMade, but the TaylorMade bag from the Masters 2019 that Tiger Woods won his 15th major, one that will be talked about for years. This bag is a collector's edition. Is awarded to... We had thousands of entries on Facebook and Instagram both. And the winner is, his name is Matt. I'm not sure if it's Streeman or Strayman. His username is M-S-T-R-E-A-M-A-N, Matt Streeman. Contacted him last night, and this man was over the roof. I mean, he was unbelievably happy. He's a Tiger guy, loves golf, just had a child. Actually, the very first thing he bought his kid, he was messaging me on social media last night. The first thing he bought when he knew his wife was pregnant was a onesie for his baby. And he put his baby in the onesie on Sunday, and Tiger won. And he was just as happy to be a father and extremely happy to have this. So congratulations to Matt from Brookfield, Connecticut. He is the winner of the season opener Masters Major Edition staff bag from TaylorMade. And we'll have more TaylorMade stuff to give away. So big thanks to the guys at TaylorMade for providing that for us.
And that's awesome. Congratulations to Matt. And what a year. How about that? What a year to win that bag. And he, you know, forever is going to know that that's connected to Tiger Woods and his victory, number 15 at the Masters, the first major in over a decade. Congratulations to Matt. Thanks again, of course, to our good friends at TaylorMade. They do a terrific job. And how about, by the way, very cool. I don't know if people have seen on social media. I'm sure they have. The mural that was put up at TaylorMade headquarters.
Oh, so cool.
Tiger's victory. I would definitely suggest people searching that out. It's very cool. I know our good friends at TaylorMade are jumping for joy and over the moon for that victory for Tiger. So another huge week for them. And, it's another huge week for gun sales, I'm sure, and another huge week for golf with Tiger Woods getting it done at the Masters, major champion again. Really another win for the ages. Just incredible.
So we'll see Tiger in two more weeks. This week's the RBC Heritage in Harbortown. You'll notice the red and white lighthouse. That's very famous there. And then we get the Zurich Classic in New Orleans, a team event, which is, you know, a nice little change up and switch up next week. And then we will get Tiger after that at the Wells Fargo. And we're not far away. We'll be back at another major championship in 1 month at the PGA at Bethpage Black in New York. So, Wacker, thank you so much. Like I said, I'm getting a little jealous. I'm going to need you to start going to more tournaments because you seem to be the good luck charm that's working for Tiger. You have now been to both of his comeback victories on the PGA Tour. So congratulations to Tiger. Wacker, thanks for your time. I know you really, truly enjoyed taking it all in. I know you love the Masters like nothing else. We will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Congratulations, Tiger Woods, a major champion once again on the PGA Tour.
I think you've had enough.
Playing through.
No? Now you've had enough.
With Froggy and Wacker.
Bitch.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.